over the last couple months, and I guess this is just part of it. Just a plug. I told Lois, I told you that I was going to get my own helper and that I didn't need anybody. And then the person I did get had some events come up that they couldn't control. So if you were feeling like you should help but you didn't want to teach, you can be my helper for the 8th grade and I'll be just fine with that. Yeah. So I guess this morning, what I want to do is kind of relate what I've been doing over the last couple months since early part of March until mid-May. There might be a couple of you that have started coming over the last year or so, or maybe even a little bit longer, and I'm gone so much that you don't even really know what I do. I serve full-time for a humanitarian organization called Kazakh Rescue, and we send young men and women to war zones and high-risk areas, natural disasters, basically to bring humanitarian aid and the hope of Jesus Christ to people that are literally in their worst possible experience that they've ever been in their life. We've been to Ukraine a couple times, and this past March through May, we spent some time in East Africa. And so I hope to kind of relate that a little bit, because I know if you put something on the bulletin, it just says, pray for Landon, and then it puts a specific country, and it's like, you have no context for what I'm even doing, and it's like, is he even there? Is he just like drinking tea somewhere in a house that he has, no one even knows what I'm really doing. So hopefully this morning I can relate that a little bit. So yeah, our operations department came to us about early part of March, maybe late part of February, and wanted us to send us to specifically to Kenya, but the East Africa region, because they want some more contacts in that area. They want to build a base in that area where they can deploy people from, and so it's not nearly as far as flying from Washington to Kenya, or Washington to Sudan. You can just fly from Kenya to Sudan in only a couple hours versus a 12 or 14 hour flight. So that was kind of the objective, was to send us to talk to people, understand more of what's going on there, and yeah, just get a better feel for what God's doing there as well. And it was a really, really good trip, and I think God helped grow our trust in Him over that time. We went, we started working with, we stayed with our host, who's a pastor that has his hands in quite a few different things. His main focus is going to boarding schools on the weekends. So boarding school in Africa, most times, they're basically there the whole time. They don't go there for a little bit and then come back home, and then like we have school here. So they're there on the weekend. So he takes him and a team, and they'll go preach and do worship. And of course, in Africa, worship is way more than what it is here, where you're just sitting in a pew and sitting out of a book. You're up dancing around, and you just go crazy. Our first experience, we go and we're at a all-girls boarding school, and they get us up front, myself and the two other guys that were on my team, and they're like, you know, you got to introduce yourselves and all this, whatever. So we get up there, and I introduce myself, David and Jaden, they're the other two guys on my team. David introduces himself, and Jaden goes to introduce himself, and they just went bananas. It was like, think of it as if you were like at a concert or something, and whether the singer walks out and everybody's like, they just go crazy. And come to find out that one of their presidents previous had been, his nickname was Jaden, and it means someone that has a lot of money. And so for the girls to see a white guy up there that has the name of Jaden, this is just the craziest thing they've ever seen in their lives. And I think it would kind of tell going on the rest of the trip kind of how it would go. But so we went with him for one weekend, and we're at this girls' boarding school, and we'd They didn't ask us to preach, which I was kind of grateful for because there were more qualified ministers there that were doing that. But they had us, we'd take like an afternoon session and answer any questions that any of the students had about life, about their relationship with God, many different things. And it was really good to, for me, like the experience I have in my life, I've had so far that God has taken me through, to be able to apply that to someone else's life and give them advice on how they, maybe whatever they're struggling with, whether it's something at home with their family or whatever. The first weekend we were there with them doing that. And at the same time, he also has a couple other different ministries where in the village that they're based out of, they do a daily food program where poor kids from the community that otherwise don't have a solid meal through the day, they come after school and get their only solid meal for the day, which was really put my what we've been blessed with in perspective for me, and how well I have all the food I could ever want. I have I can have three good meals a day, and here these kids were coming, and they're the lucky ones to get one meal a day, and it really put in perspective what God's given all of us and the work He is doing in our lives, I think, and using us to reach out to others. So that was kind of the first week or so of being with them, and then we were also meeting with other different humanitarian organizations and talking to them, seeing things of what they do. Sometimes when you go and you think something's going to work, you talk to someone and it's like, well, you guys don't really do anything at all with what we do with humanitarian work. So it's like, well, that was nice to waste an afternoon talking to you, but I guess it's all right. And God uses that to use those people to connect us with other people that are further out working. So that through that first week, we're talking to half a dozen people, and we connected with a man that goes to the northern part of Kenya. And about the only way to describe the northern part of Kenya is that it's about the most desolate, dry place I think I've ever been. This morning we were talking about Moses taking off his shoes when he was in the desert, and how that would be walking on stony and thorny ground. That would be, that doesn't seem like it would be very comfortable. Well, that's literally the ground that was there. It's completely devoid of any grass or comfort for you to walk on. It's completely rocky, and the only shrub that is there is what the government basically dropped from an airplane so that it would stop the entire place from becoming a desert. So it truly is a really bad place. Now they have a couple different, there's one big refugee camp there that houses people from Sudan and from Ethiopia that come down escaping because of the war that happens there. And so we were able to go in and to see these different places. And to be honest, I was a bit shocked because it was probably one of the best refugee camps I think I've ever been in so much that if I was someone that was living there, I'd rather live in the refugee camp than live out in the bush, because the people out in the bush literally have nothing, and the people in the refugee camp, you couldn't tell where the town stopped and where the refugee camp stopped. And for me, it was kind of I don't really think we're supposed to be here helping them. But, you know, we'll go, we'll talk to people, we'll see how it is. And I think I was more impacted by going out into the bush. Our contact that we went with, he would get bags of maize. It's our closest thing, I guess, to corn here, and take it out to them, and then they have that to make, I guess the closest thing I can say to it is mush, basically. Not like any mush that we eat. It's much more compact and hard and the most tasteless thing you've ever had, but it's what they eat. And it puts me in perspective of what everything that I'm given, and then these people will still be okay with this because they know that's all they have. So this was probably 2 or 3 weeks into our trip. we were given an opportunity to go from, we were still in the north, we were given an opportunity to go into South Sudan. And normally when someone asks me, they're like, oh, you have stories from your adventures and this, my life seems like it's like just one big adventure that I'm just off going, whatever. And oftentimes I tell them, I'm like, I don't really think we had a story, or it doesn't really seem like there's much that I could share on this. And this time around, we had a couple encounters that turned into some stories. We went to meet with a reverend that was running an orphanage. So we met with him for the day, and he fed us some goat that the second day when we were spooning stuff out, we found a hoof in there, and we're like, oh, this doesn't, I don't know. We ended up getting sick from it then, so that explains why we got sick. But we were with him, and he's a really solid guy, and he's helping the people that he can in his community. But anyway, we were there with him for the day and interacting. And, we went to bed that night, and it just started to rain. I was like, oh, this is really nice. You know, go to sleep while it's raining. It sounds really good, and it helps you just... And I woke up, and it was just... Like, it was just a torrential downpour. And all at once, I hear this, bang, 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 bang. Quick, get your stuff. Get your clothes on. Come on, we got to go. And I was like... Okay, so I quickly grab all, we quickly grab our stuff and hop in the Land Cruiser that they had rented, and the pastor was telling us, he's like, we have to go now. If we don't go now, like, we're not going to get out of here in like a day or two or something like that, because the way like infrastructure is there, when it rains, and especially the beginning of rainy season, it rains so much that, so there's a road, and then the river will come to the road, but there's no pipe underneath. The bridge isn't elevated. It's just the road and the river meet at the same place. So you can expect that when it's like torrential, when it's rainy season, it just goes across. You can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. So you're just stuck there. And of course, it was already pretty bad getting to the first intersection. And then when we got there, it was just, if I had the pictures to show you, I would, but it's just like probably up to my knees, probably. And that may not seem very like much, but if you're in some dinky little, we weren't in a dinky little car, but most of the locals are in a dinky little car. And if you take your car to there, you're just going to be gone. You're not sticking around on the road. You might as well turn it into a boat or something. So we're like, well, we have to wait a little bit. So we waited a couple hours, and finally it went down a little bit that the driver was willing to test it. We kept telling him, we can make it. We can just go. And the pastor kept telling us, he's like, if I jump out in there, you guys can go get me, right? He just wanted to test our skills and our water rescue that we had. But so finally we went. We got through the first one, and then we came to the second one, and the same thing. So we had to wait a couple more hours. And finally we got through, and our host in South Sudan, he kept trying to call us, and he's like, you guys just gotta wait, don't, you know, just take it easy, because of course he would feel awful if some Americans came to his little neck of the woods, and then they get swept away in a river, and he's like, no Americans ever going to come here again. But it was just a crazy experience. And so God protected us, and we were able to make it through. And we had another experience in Kenya the same way. The rains had been in South Sudan, and they'd moved down, and we came to another road. And by this time, we weren't with our trusty Land Cruiser. We were with everybody else in a... it's hard to explain a bus to them, because it's like not a bus here, but everybody's just basically just squashed in, probably at least close to 60, 70 people maybe, I'm not sure. It all just squashed into this bus, and we came to another river, and we weren't the first ones there. And we sat there for a while, and then finally the bus driver was getting antsy, and he's like, I'm just going to go. And we were like, oh, yeah, he should totally go. Some of the other people were like, you can't make us go. You have to think about us too. And he was like, no, I'm going to go. So they pushed everybody on the bus, and God protected us and we went across. And I didn't really think about it. It's like, well, the bus seems pretty good. And then a week later, we heard a story of another bus that went to go across, and they got swept across. And I'm not sure how many people died from that, but God protected us. And of course, the bus driver from the bus that got swept, they couldn't find him. He probably ran off because he didn't want to get thrown in jail for putting everybody else's lives in danger. This is the one. Going back a little bit, when we crossed from back in this, did you get it? Dude, let's go. Oh, thank the Lord. Oh. So I'm going to go back just a little bit. Jonathan, you're the best. I tell you right now. If this thing works. Oh, it's on off though. Okay, here we go. Sweet. Cool. So now I have some pictures to describe things to you. I'll just say this. When I get to the part about Ethiopia, this might make more sense. This is a traditional dish in Ethiopia that all this right here is what you'd call, normally you'd just call that flatbread. But to them, it's sour. It's like a sourdough flatbread. It's kind of weird. Honestly, of all the places I've ever eaten, Ethiopia was, probably the worst, just because they put peppers in everything, even though they don't have to. They just assume that it has to be hot. It might not even taste good. It's just like, no, we just have to put it in there. I don't know. And then there's your pepper, and then there's other, like, lentils, vegetables, and there's a little bit of meat in here, but it's a traditional dish in Ethiopia that you take a little piece off, you go in, you'll grab it a little bit, you'll mound it up, you grab a little bit, you mound it up, to them, it's, I'll tell this story, I was getting my hair cut, and they were eating this outside, one of the other guys was eating with them, and it's a huge honor if they feed you as well. So I'm sitting here getting my hair cut, and this woman comes in, here, she goes in, and she did this like four times. I was like, I guess they really care about us. See if I can. Jonathan, you might just have to move him. We might have to get a new button here sometime soon. Okay. I'll just stop here real quick. So it's kind of blurry, but if you know anything of Kenya, the next photo will kind of give a bit more detail, but so this is the capital, and we spent a good bit of time down in this area. When I was talking about northern Kenya, we were up here. So just to give context to, if you did well in social studies in school, this would make sense. If you didn't, then you're just completely lost. This is, when I talk about East Africa, this is what I'm talking about here. Because sometimes people think, well, Africa, like, there's a lot of countries in Africa. And yeah, there are. There's plenty. But this is what I'm talking about right here. This is a group. This is a photo of the group that we went with to the schools to preach and minister to the girls that were there. And when I was talking about girls, there are 900 of them. Think of like the fellowship hall, and then it's just completely packed, so packed that when someone's trying to go in, you can't really tell, but over here, has a chair above her head, and she's trying to weave her way through the crowd to find some place that she can put it down, but most likely she won't be able to find a spot, because it's just completely packed with people. And then this was one of the afternoon sessions where they would go out and sit out, and then we would talk to them about our own life experiences, or if they had questions, they'd write it down on a piece of paper and pass it up. And this is one time where they were actually leading the worship and we weren't. The food program that I was talking about earlier, about the kids coming and only getting one square meal a day. So they normally would get like rice and cabbage, cooked cabbage, and that was the meal for the day. Or that would be ugali, which is like maize flour that's like they cooked it, and that's what I was talking about just being the most tasteless thing. But it's what they had. And they also, another thing they were doing, they were taking young people from around the country and putting them through a discipleship program. So this was one of the Sundays where the discipleship students were the ones leading out in the ministry of the revival that they were doing at one of the schools. So when I was talking about the north, about being desolate, this is what I'm talking about. All these, the only reason they have these, and it looks, off in the distance, when it all comes together, it looks like, oh, there's a lot out there. Well, that's from all the seeds that the Kenyans flew in to stop it from all just looking like this. But it truly is, and it gets, normal temperature there is like 100 degrees, so it's really something to get used to. We were there for a week, and by the end of the week, I was finally getting used to it, but that whole week was rough. This was while we were in northern Kenya. This is a school that they're building. So it's just digging posts in, and then once they get it up, the first rafter there is up, and these ones are down, but they'll flip those back up, and then they put all their sheet metal on top of that. See if I can catch up to where I'm at. Here they were, David's serving porridge to some of the bush people. It's porridge. It's kind of hard to explain. It's like a combination of like some kind of, there's a little bit of grain and some kind of like vegetable and maybe a little bit of sugar. I'm not sure exactly what's in it, but it's not, it's nutritious, it'll keep them going, but it's nothing to rave about. But it's what they had. And this was an experience in itself. So when you think of African people, or bush people, this is what you think of. But for a first-time experience, it was like, well, you see, there's all these beads that she has on her neck. And when they have all the beads on their neck, it symbolizes basically that they're part of the tribe. And to a further extent that they've never been educated. So she maybe have gotten education up to fourth grade, maybe is the most. And then that's about it. And you'll see, sometimes you'd see some that didn't have any beads. And that means that they went further on into education. Maybe they went all the way through high school or whatever, but it's just an interesting cultural thing, and it takes their neck and it shoots it like way up, so that they just look so much different than what we do, because our necks are whatever, they're a certain length, but then it's like almost like not quite twice that, but it's quite a bit more when you put all those beads over a lifetime. Because the little girl here, she's got like one or two, but then these here that are quite a bit older, that's a lot, and it's a lot of weight too. And then this is something similar to what are basically what they live in. So this here is where they keep most of their stuff, and if it rains they'll go in here, but if it doesn't they sleep out of here at night, and it's basically just a wall of sticks and there's no roof. And they're the closest thing you could put to it, like in America, would be the Indians. That's just how they live. Yeah. We were at a school still in northern Kenya before we went to South Sudan. And we were doing a porridge program. I remember all these the kids. And none of these were from, I don't think any of these were tribal. They were just from the surrounding area because none of them had beads on. Again, feeding porridge. This was up in South Sudan when we were at the orphanage. I know it's pretty blurry, so you can't really tell. But, yeah. Here we are. So over here is the road. When I was talking about the river going across the road. So the road is here, and it comes down through here It just goes with the land. And then when we came through earlier, it was just a dry riverbed. But then it rained, and this is all going through there. And you can see it like really bubbling there through, and it was really rushing through. If I was able to show you a video, you'd understand a little bit more. But yeah, it's quite an experience to see that. And just put yourself in God's hands and know that if this is the time, then this is the time. And this was the time when we crossed with the bus. This one, it is a little bit elevated, but not over here. So it still runs across and it goes down. And there was a bunch of people just sitting over here waiting. And then when we went through, everybody else was like, oh, well, now I feel emboldened. I should go. So then they all went through. So before I get to this part, I was going to tell a story before he came. We were in South Sudan going to Kenya, and in that northern part, there's a stretch in between certain cities. Sometimes there's bandits, sometimes there's not. They'll stop buses that are going along during the day, or other trucks that are carrying supplies or whatever else, and sometimes it's not a very safe area. And we came through the border in South Sudan, came on the Kenyan side, got all our papers together, and then we started to go, and we were maybe a minute or two down the road, and this little bike comes up alongside us. Stop, 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 stop. And they said, there's guys up there with guns, and you guys need to turn around. And we're like, okay. So we turned around and went back to the border, and there's an army base right there. And they were having this whole blah, 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 going off and on about, there's a gunman down there that we don't want to go down there, but that the army needs to go, and this and that, whatever. And we were just like, if you go fast enough, like, how bad can it be? How bad can it be? Well, it's us being maybe a little dumb, I'm not sure, but we were just like, well, regardless, I mean, God's going to take care of us one way or another. And one of the pastors was like, we can't do this. This isn't safe. And we're like, either you trust God or you don't. We're going to go or not. And so the army guys were finishing up for the day, and they were supposed to go back town anyway. So we just went with them. And then, of course, there was no one there. And I don't know. It reminded me that sometimes we make too big of a deal about a perceived threat or something to ourselves, or whatever we think that Satan might be trying to attack us with. And when we put ourselves in God's hands, it's never as bad as what we may think it to be, or not always as bad as what we think it to be. So, yeah. So we spent another couple of weeks in Kenya meeting with different people and kind of advancing what our operations department wanted us to do. And then they sent us to Ethiopia. This time it was just two of us. One of the other guys went home. But what's to go see in Ethiopia? What's to do there? So Ethiopia back in 2020 had a civil war, mainly in this region up here. And if you know anything about Ethiopian politics, normally when the ruling party or tribe or whatever is in charge, they're the ones, they basically push everybody out, and they're the ones in charge. And it happened that after the election, there's a powerful tribe up here that wasn't appreciating that of being pushed out of power the way they were. And if I understand it correctly, the result from that was 2 years of civil war, which destroyed much of the farmland up here that they did have, because obviously these people aren't going to be too pleased, and they'll do whatever they can to destroy their livelihood of even fighting back. And so the primary goal for us was to hope to get up here and to see the area, because it was a 2-year civil war, finished in 2022. But we spent the first week or so we were down here meeting with different organizations, ones that work underneath the UN. And if you know anything about the UN, they say they do a whole lot of things. And then when you start talking to people that work underneath them, you realize that they do a lot of talking and not so much doing. So we had a good experience with, give you an example. We were sitting in a video call listening to a meeting. We weren't even the ones in it. We were just listening to it. And someone brought up a point to someone else. They're like, they asked them a question about this or whatever. And the person they asked, they said, "Oh no, we'll talk about that in the meeting next month." It's like, why are you going to push things off and then nothing ever gets done? You're going to push it off to the next month and it's going to go on and on and on. But that's just how they think. They have all the money, they have all the power, and so it doesn't matter to them how quickly things get done as long as things keep coming in. So, yeah, we spent some frustrated evenings. This was our team while we were in Ethiopia. This is my boss and his wife. He's the assistant director of our operations department. And then these are just some Ethiopians that we were working with, understanding the ministry that they're doing. And yeah, as much as I can. So this, while we were in the north, this was a refugee compound where they were housing them. So if you can tell, the outsides are lined with clothes that they're trying to dry. And compared to Kenya, where we saw the refugee camps, this was much worse. People from Sudan or from this area as well. When we went through and looked for areas that actually had been affected by the war, you couldn't really see them because they had been able to rebuild much quicker than what we had expected. Every once in a while, you'd seen a vehicle that was burned out, but not very much. My time is running. I need to keep going. And then these are just, she's here cooking out of a small little, I guess you could almost call it a kiln, but a stove that she has. She's making bread or something, I'm not sure. And so we were getting ready to go home, and we thought we would go home. And then the best way to describe it is someone on the board of Kazakh said that they had this great contact in Ukraine that we hadn't talked to before and said that we should go talk to them. So operations got all excited and decided to send us over there. And I'll talk a little bit more about this maybe once I'm done explaining what we did, but it ended up being a bit different than what we thought. So we went, and we had a chaplain that we were going to work with that he goes to the front lines and working with people and also ministering to soldiers and different things like that. And we were just supposed to shadow him, see what he does, and then take that information back to our operations department, which is kind of what we did. For those of you that have been keeping up with it, you know, but right now, this is what the war in Ukraine, this is what the front looks like. So in the eastern part, along here, that's where it runs. Back in December, we were down here at this part. And I've also been up to here and spent some time, a day, down in this area. So just to give you context, when I talk about Ukraine, this is what I'm talking about. And then this was just packaging some humanitarian supplies that would go out to the front, to people that are still living in villages out there and they don't want to leave. So I guess with the little time that I have left, I wanted to talk about going to Ukraine and it being a bit different than we thought. So we went and there was a couple of days beforehand where we were talking about this trip that we're going to do and thinking about planning going forward. And for whatever reason, I still don't know why, and I don't know if I'll ever know why, but that doesn't matter. God started telling me at that point that we're not supposed to be there in Ukraine. And we had anticipated being there for a month. We had told our contact that we'll be there for till the end of May, and we're there. Just use us however you want. We don't care. And then I start hearing this from the Lord before we even got to Ukraine, at first I was like, I don't know. It makes sense to me in my head from an operational perspective and all these other things, but like spiritually, like what's the deal behind this? And so I was like, I'll keep listening, see what God says, but I'll just let this play out a little bit. And came to a couple of days, and this, it didn't go away. And we met up with our other two guys, the other two guys that flew from the States to meet myself and my other teammate there. And we got there, and one of the other guys that came from the States said, "Yeah, I have real heaviness about this trip. There's one other time where I felt this specific heaviness, and it was God telling me to get out of something. And I can't say that I know what God's doing here, but I know that this is what I feel." And so we're like, well, it makes two of us now. Obviously God's trying to tell us something. And we're like, well, we don't know whether it's specific, like right now we need to leave, or we can let this play out a little bit and then go. And so we let it kept going and kept going. And if anything, it just kept getting stronger and stronger that we're not supposed to be here right now. And at this point, we had actually made it to our contact, and we were with him for the first day or two, and he's a really solid dude. I mean, I would enjoy working with him for months on end if that's what God wanted me to do. It was him personally, there was no problem with. But this is what God was telling us to do, and we were like, well, we need to have this conversation with him. This is going to be a hard conversation to have. So we were loading up a van one evening, and we're like, I guess it just has to be now. So team lead stopped him just as we were starting to load up these vans, and we're like, he was like, he said a little bit to him about, you know, do you really think that you could, you know, best use this here? We feel like maybe we could, it would just be best if we just, you know, gave you funds more than manpower, because you don't really need as much manpower. And immediately he just went off he wasn't like yelling or anything like that, but he was like very convinced that like, yeah, we need to be here and we need to be helping him. And like, you see how like what we're doing, you can go back and tell your church and all these different things. And immediately it just felt like Spirit was like trying to stop him from understanding what we were saying. And he went on and told us all this stuff. And we were like, okay, we kind of backed off a little bit, and we helped him load the van. During that whole process, we were kind of talking to each other, and we're like, if anything, now we feel way more strongly that we need to leave. And we kept loading the van, and it got to the end, and then he was talking to the two of us, myself and the team lead, and he was like, yeah, so we're going to go and do this the next couple of days, and tomorrow we're going to get in the van and go to Kherson. That sound good? And I was like, no, not really. And he looked at me a little bit, and I was like, you didn't want to listen to this before, so this, I'm just going to tell you straight this time, and there's something God wants me to tell you, and you have to listen. You can't, I don't know why I'm telling you this. I don't know what God's saying to this, but I have to tell you, because I can't hear God tell me something and then not listen to him. So I just told him straight. I was like, I don't know why we're not supposed to be here. I was like, this is just what God's telling us. I asked him if God was telling him anything. He's like, no, God's not telling me anything. And I just told him everything I had. And he stood there for a little bit. He's like, well, if God's telling you that, then you need to go. You cannot stay here. And we kind of breathed a sigh of relief. But he was like, thank you for telling me this. Thank you for being open and honest with me. Obviously God's doing something here that I'm not seeing. But, and then he went on to tell this story of, I think it was before the war. He was established in a village, and he had a restaurant and a business and I think something else. He was doing really well for himself. He had new vehicles and everything, and God told him one day he's supposed to leave. And he didn't know why. But he's like, okay. So he took what he had, and he left a lot of stuff in this one village and just left. And he's like, yeah, I guess this is the same circumstance. He's like, if you need to go, you need to go. So we left, and we still don't know why God told us to leave. It's completely a mystery to me, both me and my team. But we don't know. We don't know if we would have taken the van that the next day and go to Kyrgyzstan and gotten hit by a strike. No one knows. Only God knows. But when we're only looking at things from a 10,000 foot view, and God's looking at things from a 50,000 foot view, we can miss so much of what God's doing. And it's not that we have to know, but this is what God's doing, and he's just saying, just trust me. Just trust me with, even though it seems completely, it doesn't make sense that you're going to leave after wanting to be here for a month and putting so much effort and so much funds into, like, raising funds to get plane tickets to go and all these other things that our public relations did for us. You don't always have to understand what God's doing in these circumstances. So I don't know if we'll ever know, but I have faith that God will use it for great purpose. My time's getting away from me, so I'll try to cut it close now. But yeah, I hope that kind of makes sense. What we've been doing over the last couple of months, because I know as someone that you support, it does well for me to keep you informed on what I'm doing and what's going on in the world, because I don't expect you all to always keep up on those things. It's not your responsibility. God has given you things here that you're supposed to do, and I'm thankful for that. I think that's all I have. So I don't know. You guys, I'll give the rest of the time to you.